A Jewish rabbi stands before his followers and tells them a story about a father with two sons. Everyone leans in, expecting the familiar biblical pattern where the younger son triumphs. Instead, they get a tale about a reckless kid who blows his inheritance on wine and women, crawls home in shame, and gets thrown a party, while his responsible older brother fumes outside. No neat moral, no comfortable ending, just a question hanging in the air. What would you do? For two millennia, we've been answering that question wrong. We've turned Jesus' parables into Sunday school lessons with tidy morals, stripping away their original power to provoke and disturb. These weren't bedtime stories meant to comfort. They were narrative grenades designed to explode our assumptions about God, neighbor, and self. The problem isn't just that we've misunderstood them. It's that we've domesticated them into something safe and predictable, like declawing a tiger and calling it a house cat. Parables have always been designed to provoke rather than pacify. In the Hebrew Bible, Jotham tells a story about trees seeking a king, where only the worthless bramble accepts, a direct challenge to political ambition. Nathan's parable about a stolen lamb leads King David to unwittingly condemn himself. These stories forced listeners into corners, demanding they examine their own hearts and choices. To hear these parables as Jesus' first audience did requires understanding their Jewish context, recognizing their scriptural echoes, and embracing the discomfort they're meant to create. Jesus mastered provocative parables, but we've systematically neutered them. We've relegated these complex narratives to children's ministry, reducing them to simplistic morals while clergy avoid their sharp edges. We've lost the historical context, how Samaritans and Jews related, what cultural expectations governed families, how labor contracts worked, that made these stories shocking. Most damaging, interpreters have turned parables into attacks on Judaism itself. They falsely claim Jews believed God only loved the righteous, misrepresent purity laws as preventing compassion, and portray Judaism as legalistic and heartless, a convenient foil to make Jesus look revolutionary. This reading perpetuates dangerous bigotry. The parables don't reveal something radically new, but tap into ancient Jewish wisdom that remains deeply unsettling. Rather than accepting challenges that would convict ourselves, we've created a tidy picture of Jewish legalism versus Christian grace. But if an interpretation requires elaborate decoder rings, reduces complex narratives to platitudes, or reinforces negative stereotypes, we've missed Jesus's genius entirely. The title, Prodigal Son, misses half the story. The opening, Some Man Had Two Sons, would have triggered immediate recognition in Jesus' Jewish audience. Throughout Scripture, fathers with two sons follow a pattern. The younger gets favored, Abel over Cain, Isaac over Ishmael, Jacob over Esau. Listeners expected another righteous younger brother story. Instead, they got a self-absorbed kid who demands his inheritance early and scatters his property on dissolute living. What's truly prodigal isn't just the son's wasteful spending, but the father's reckless generosity. When the younger son returns, the father runs to meet him, undignified for a man of his status, and throws an extravagant party. But the father reserves his most intimate communication for the elder son, his words. He corrects the older son's distancing language, your son, by emphasizing family bonds, your brother. The parable ends without resolution. We never learn if the elder son joins the celebration. This ambiguity is the point. The hardest person to forgive might be the one you're obligated to love. Don't delay reconciliation until you feel forgiving. Calling someone a good Samaritan today means they're helpful. In first century Judea, it sounded like compassionate terrorist, a shocking contradiction. Samaritans weren't strangers. They were despised enemies who shared ancestry but had diverged religiously and politically. Jesus's parable, a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho gets robbed and left half dead. A priest passes by, then a Levite. Traditional interpretations claim they avoided him due to purity laws, but this crumbles under scrutiny. The priest was traveling down from Jerusalem, not up to the temple where ritual purity mattered. More importantly, Jewish law required attending to both the injured and the dead. Saving a life overrides virtually all other concerns. Then comes the Samaritan. The text lavishes attention on his actions. He feels compassion, bandages wounds, pours on oil and wine, sets the man on his own animal, takes him to an inn, pays for his care, and promises to cover additional expenses. This isn't just kindness, it's extravagant, sacrificial care from someone who had every reason to walk past. The message lands like a punch. Those who want to kill you may be the only ones who will save you. Cycles of violence can be broken. When Jesus asks, which was a neighbor, the lawyer can't even say the Samaritan. He chokes out, the one who showed mercy. Some truths are too uncomfortable to name directly. Jesus used familiar images to describe God's kingdom, but they weren't comfortable. Consider leaven. In ancient times, yeast meant sourdough starter, a fermentation process that seemed gross despite producing delicious bread. Jesus typically used yeast negatively, warning against the yeast of the Pharisees. So comparing God's kingdom to a woman hiding leaven and flour is deliberately surprising. The word hide and crypto suggests something valuable secreted away to be revealed later, transformed. 3 measures of flour, 40 to 60 pounds, yields far more bread than one person needs, echoing Genesis 18, where Sarah prepares the same amount for divine visitors. The kingdom works through everyday moments when everyone has enough, transforming everything, like leaven through dough. The pearl of great price challenges differently. A merchant finds an extraordinary pearl and sells everything, home, provisions, family security, to buy it. By conventional standards, he's reckless. Pearls are beautiful, but useless. Yet he recognizes true worth and establishes alternative values, defying societal logic. The mustard seed parable similarly emphasizes ecological adaptation. God's creatures find shelter wherever available, whether in mighty cedars or humble mustard plants. The kingdom appears in ordinary settings, our backyards, nature's generosity, daily human work. 2 men enter the temple to pray. The Pharisee thanks God he's not like robbers or this tax collector, noting he fasts twice weekly and tithes everything. The tax collector stands distant, beats his breast. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Jesus declares the tax collector went home justified. We've reduced this to a morality tale about humble sinners versus hypocritical religious leaders, but first century Jews would have found both characters shocking. Tax collectors weren't marginalized victims, they were corrupt Roman agents exploiting people for profit. His temple presence was scandalous, like a mafia accountant at church. Pharisees were respected teachers, making ancient wisdom relevant. Once we judge one character better than the other, we're trapped by the parable's logic, which reveals that divine grace cannot be limited. A landlord hires workers throughout the day, at dawn, mid-morning, noon, mid-afternoon, and an hour before sunset. When evening comes, everyone receives 1 denarius, a full day's wage. Those who worked 12 hours complain about the inequality. Traditional interpretations allegorize this as God showing grace, with early workers representing Jews toiling under the law, while late workers represent Gentiles. This misses crucial lessons rooted in Jewish tradition. The landlord fulfills his contract with the first hired while generously providing for those hired later. The point isn't those who have get more, but those who have not get enough, challenging anyone with economic power to pay what provides dignity and sustenance to all workers. Jesus's parables unlock life's mysteries through questions, not answers. They feature unforgettable characters, the prodigal son squandering wealth, the persistent widow demanding justice, the shrewd manager reducing debts. These stories challenge stereotypes while making us laugh and uncomfortable simultaneously. We resist their provocative teachings because we prefer comfortable answers to challenging questions, consensus to messy debate, clear morals to ambiguous endings. One need not worship Jesus to find meaning here. The lost coin speaks to universal anxiety and joy. The mustard seed's subversive growth resonates across cultures. These pearls of Jewish wisdom, heard without anti-Jewish distortion, gleam with undimmed brilliance. they still disturb us, about violence, compulsion, judgment based on care for the vulnerable rather than religious observance. Let them unsettle you. Let them raise unanswerable questions. Let them work like leaven through your assumptions about God, neighbor, and self. The moment we domesticate these stories into comfortable platitudes, we lose what makes them transformative, their refusal to let us rest easy in our certainties.